Colin put a hand tenderly to his arm.
Richard, you need to get some rest. You can't infer all this from Colo's journal alone. It was just one journal written a long time ago.
He yanked his arm away. I don't know where else to look. Shota said the wind was hunting me. I don't need to go to sleep to have nightmares.
In that instant, Colin knew that it wasn't Shota's message that was driving him. It was the prophecy down in the pit. The first part of the prophecy said, "On the red moon will come the firestorm." It was the second part that truly terrified her. To quench the inferno, he must seek the remedy in the wind. Lightning will find him on that path, for the one in white, his true beloved, will betray him in her blood. She realized that the prophecy frightened him more than he had admitted. Someone knocked at the door.
"What?"
Richard yelled. Kara opened the door and poked her head in. "General Kersen would like to see you, Lord Rall." Richard raked his fingers back through his hair.
"Send him in, please, Kara."
Richard put a hand to Colin's shoulder as he stared off toward the window.
"I'm sorry," he whispered. "You're right. I need some sleep. Maybe Nadine can give me some of her herbs to put me to sleep. My mind doesn't seem to want to allow it when I try."
She would sooner let Shota give him something. Colin answered with a tender touch, fearing to test her voice at that moment. General Kersen, wearing a wide grin, marched into the room. He saluted with a fist over his heart before coming to a halt.
"Lord Rall, good morning. And a good morning it is, thanks to you."
Richard took a sip of his tea.
"Why's that?"
The general slapped Richard on the shoulder.
"The men are all better. The things you ordered, the garlic, blueberries, quench oak tea, it worked. They're all well again. I've got a whole army of bright-eyed men who are ready and able to do as ordered. I can't tell you how relieved I am, Lord Rall."
"Your smile just did, General." "I'm relieved, too.
My men are uplifted that their new Lord Rall is a worker of great magic, able to turn death from their door. Every one of those men would like to buy you an ale and toast your health and long life."
"It wasn't magic. It was simply things that..." "Thank them for the offer, but I..." "What about the riots? Were there any more last night?" General Kersen grunted dismissively.
"It's mostly finished. The worry went out of people when the moon returned to normal."
"Good. That's good news, General. Thanks for the report." The general rubbed a finger along his smooth jaw.
There was one other thing, Lord Rall."
He glanced at Colin.
"If we could talk..."
The man let out a sigh.
A woman was murdered last night."
"I'm sorry. Was it someone you knew?"
"No, Lord Rall. She was a woman who..." "She accepted money in return for..."
"If you're trying to say she was a whore, General," Colin said, "I've heard the word before. I won't faint if I hear it again."
"Yes, Mother Confessor."
He turned his attention back to Richard.
"She was found dead this morning."
"What happened to her? How was she killed?" The general was looking more uncomfortable by the moment.
"Lord Rall, I've been looking at dead people for a lot of years. I can't remember the last time I vomited when I saw one."
Richard rested a hand on one of the leather pouches on his wide belt. "What was done to her?" The general glanced to Colin as if to beg her indulgence as he put an arm around Richard's shoulder and pulled him aside. Colin couldn't hear the whispered words, but the look on Richard's face told her she didn't want to know. Richard went to the hearth and stood staring into the flames.
"I'm sorry, but you must have men who can look into it. Why are you bringing this to me?"
The general grimaced and cleared his throat.
"Well, you see, Lord Rall, it was your brother who found her."
Richard turned with a dark frown.
"What was Dreffen doing at a house of prostitution?" "Well, I asked him that myself, Lord Rall. He doesn't seem to me a man who would have any trouble."
The general wiped a hand across his face.
"I asked him, and he said that it was his business, not mine, if he wanted to go to whorehouses."
Colin could see the tightly controlled anger etched in Richard's expression. He abruptly snatched his gold cloak from a chair.
"Let's go. Take me there. Take me where Dreffen goes. I want to talk to the people there."
Colin and General Curson rushed after Richard as he swept out the door. She caught his sleeve and glanced to the general.
General, could you give us a moment, please?
After he moved down the hall, Colin pulled Richard in the other direction, away from Kara, Raina, Ulick, and Egan. She didn't think that Richard was in any mood at the moment to be looking into such a thing. Besides, she had come to him for a reason.
Richard, there are representatives waiting to meet with us. They've been waiting days.
Drefin is my brother.
He's also a grown man.
Richard rubbed his eyes.
I need to see about this, and I have a lot of other things on my mind. Would you mind talking to the representatives? Tell them that I was called away on important matters and that they can just as easily give their lands surrendered to you and then all the arrangements of command can begin to be coordinated?
I can. I know that some of them would be just as happy to talk to me and not have to face you. Even in surrender, they're terrified of you.
I wouldn't hurt them, Richard objected.
Richard, you've frightened the wits out of them before when you demanded their surrender. You promised to annihilate them if they dared join with the Imperial Order. They fear you might do it anyway, on a whim. The reputation of the Master of Dahara precedes you, and you fed their fears. You can't expect that they'll suddenly be at ease around you just because they agree to your terms.
He leaned down and whispered in her ear.
Well, just tell them how lovable I am.
I can tell them that you look forward to working with them for our mutual peace and prosperity, she said with a smile. They trust me and will listen. But Tristan Bashkar, the Jarian minister, is here, along with a pair from the royal house in Grenadon. These three are the important ones, the ones with huge standing armies. They're expecting to meet with you. It is they who may not be satisfied to surrender to me. They will want to discuss terms.
Make them satisfied.
Tristan Bashkar is not an affable man, but a tough negotiator, as are Leonora and Walter Cholbane from Grenadon.
That's one reason I ended the Midlands Alliance. Too many wish to argue and posture. Arguing and posturing are over. The terms of surrender are unconditional.
Richard hooked a thumb behind his wide leather belt. His expression hardened.
The terms are fair to all, the same for all, and are not subject to discussion. They're either with us or against us.
Colin dragged a finger down the black sleeve of his shirt over the rise and fall of his muscles. He'd been busy with the journal. It had been too long since she'd been in those arms.
Richard, you depend on me for advice. I know these lands. Just having them agree is not the only aim. There will be need for sacrifice. We need their full cooperation in this war. You are Lord Rawl, the Master of Dahara. You made the demands. You said that surrender, while unconditional, will be handled with respect for their people. I know these representatives. They will expect to see you as a matter of your respect for them.
You are the Mother Confessor. We are one in this as in everything else. You led these people long before I came along. You have no less standing than I. You have had their respect a good long time. Remind them of that.
Richard directed a brief gaze up the hall to the waiting general and the others. He looked back into her eyes.
It may not be any of General Curson's business, as far as Drefin is concerned, but it is mine. I'll not be deceived by another brother. From what you've said and others have told me, he already has women in the palace fawning over him. If he catches something from those whores and then gives it to the young women here, that's my business. I'll not have it be my brother bringing diseases to innocent women here who trust him because he's my brother.
Sarah, the woman who had been bringing tea to Richard, was young and trusting. She was one of the women captivated by Drefin.
Colin rubbed his back. I understand. If you promise you will get some sleep, I'll go talk with the representatives. When you have time to talk to them, then you will talk to them. They have no choice but to wait. You are the Lord Rawl.
Richard bent and kissed her cheek.
I love you.
Then marry me.
Soon. We'll go wake the Slif soon.
Richard, you be careful. Marlin said that the Sister of the Dark, I don't remember her name, left Aidendrill and returned to Jagang, but he may be lying. She could still be out there.
Sister Amelia. You know, I remember her. When I first went to the Palace of the Prophets, she was one of Verna's friends who met us. Sisters Phoebe, Janet, and Amelia. I remember Amelia's tears of joy at seeing Verna after all those years.
Jagang has her now.
He nodded. Verna must be heartbroken that her friend is in Jagang's hands, and worse, that she's a sister of the dark, if Verna even knows.
You be careful. Despite what Jagang says, she may still be lurking in Adendrill.
I doubt it, but I'll be careful. He turned and signaled to Kara. She sprinted up the hall. Kara, I'd like you to go with Colin. Let Berdine get some rest. I'll take Reyna, Ulick, and Egan with me.
Yes, Lord Rahl, I will keep her safe.
Richard smiled. I know you will, Kara, but that's not going to get you out of your punishment.
She betrayed no emotion. Yes, Lord Rahl. What punishment? Colin asked when they were out of earshot. An unjust one, Mother Confessor. That bad? What is it? I am to feed seeds to his chipmunks.
Colin suppressed a smile.
That doesn't sound so bad, Kara.
Kara flipped her Aegeel up into her fist.
That is why it is unjust, Mother Confessor.
Chapter 26. Colin sat alone in the ornate chair of the Mother Confessor, the tallest one behind the semicircular dais, under the ornate fresco of Magda Cirrus, the first Mother Confessor, and her wizard, Merit. They were painted onto the dome that capped the enormous council chambers. Colin watched the representatives approaching across the expanse of marble before her. From her place of honor overhead, Magda Cirrus had witnessed the long history that was the Midlands Alliance. She had witnessed, too, Richard ending it. Colin prayed that Magda Cirrus's spirit would understand and approve of his reasons. They were benevolent, despite what it must seem to some. Kara stood behind Colin's right shoulder. Colin had hastily gathered a number of administrators to handle matters of state, such as the signing of documents of surrender and trade instructions, and several Daharan officers to oversee matters of command. They all waited silently behind her left shoulder. Colin tried to focus her mind on the things she must say and do, but Richard's words about the Temple of the Winds made it hard to think of anything else. He thought the Temple of the Winds was sentient. The Winds were hunting Richard. The Temple of the Winds was hunting him. That threat lurked in every dark corner of her mind. Footsteps of the representatives and boot strikes of the soldiers escorting them echoed off vast expanses of marble and brought her out of her brooding. The approaching knot of people strode through glaring shafts of sunlight that streamed in through round windows at the lower edge of the dome. Colin put on her confessor's face, as her mother had taught her, a face that showed nothing and masked what was inside. Arched openings around the room covered stairways up to colonnaded balconies edged with polished mahogany railings. The group, flanked by Daharan soldiers, came to a halt before the resplendent, carved desk. Tristan Bashkar of Jara and Leonora and Walter Cholbane of Grenadon stood at the fore. Behind them waited Ambassadors Selden from Mardovia, Wexler from Pendazon Reach, and Brumford from Togressa. Colin knew that Jara and Grenadon, lands of vast wealth and large standing armies, were likely to be the most obstinate about retaining their prerogative of status in return for their surrender. She knew she must shake their confidence first. Having served in a position of authority and power most of her life, first as a confessor, then as the Mother Confessor, Colin knew the task well. She knew these people, knew how they thought. Surrender was acceptable as long as they could retain station above certain other lands, and as long as they could be assured of unfettered authority in their own business. That kind of attitude was no longer acceptable. It couldn't be tolerated if all of them were to have a chance against the Imperial Order. Colin had to uphold Richard's word and conditions of surrender. The future of every land in the Midlands depended on this. In order for this new union to prevail against the Imperial Order, there could no longer be sovereign lands, each with its own agenda. They must now all be one, under one authority of command, working together as one people, not a coalition that could fragment at a critical moment, letting the Imperial Order snatch freedom from all.
Lord Rahl is occupied with matters of our mutual safety in our struggle. I have come in his place to hear your decisions. Your words will be passed on to him as you speak them to me. As Mother Confessor, Queen of Galia,
Queen of Kelton and betrothed of the Master of Dahara, I have the authority to speak on behalf of the Daharan Empire. My word is as final as would be Lord Rawl's." The words had come out unbidden, but that was what it was, the Daharan Empire. Richard was its supreme leader, its supreme authority. The representatives bowed and mumbled that they understood. Wanting these people of authority to know that the order of things was no longer how it had been in these chambers in the past, Colin reversed the order of how such matters were handled. "Ambassador Brumford, please step forward." Tristan Bashkar and Leonora Cholbane immediately began objecting. It was unheard of to have a lesser land speak first. Colin's glare brought them to silence. "When I ask you to speak for your people, then you may speak, not before. Until a land joins with us through surrender of their sovereignty, they have no standing before me. Do not expect that your presumption will be excused, as was customary in the past in the Alliance of the Midlands. The Midlands Alliance is no more. You now stand in the Daharan Empire." An icy silence settled over the chambers. Colin had been devastated when she had first heard that Richard had spoken much the same words in this very chamber to representatives of the Midlands. She had come to understand that there was no other way. Tristan Bashkar and the Cholbanes, to whom she had directed her words, stood red-faced but silent. When she moved her gaze to Ambassador Brumford, he remembered her orders and scurried forward. The amicable Ambassador Brumford gathered his voluminous violet robes in one hand and put a knee to the marble floor as he sank into a deep bow.
Mother Confessor, he said as he straightened, Tobressa stands ready to join with you and all free people in our alliance against tyranny.
Thank you, Ambassador. We welcome Tobressa as a member of the Daharan Empire. The people of Tobressa will have standing equal to any among us. We know your people will do their part.
They will. Thank you, Mother Confessor. Please, relay my word to Lord Rawl that we are joyful to be a part of Dahara.
Colin smiled sincerely. Lord Rawl and I share your joy, Ambassador Brumford. He moved to the side as Colin called forward the muscled, short, fiery-eyed Ambassador Wexler from Penderson Reach. Mother Confessor, he said upon arising, tugging his leather surcoat straight. Penderson Reach is a small land, with a small legion of men at arms, but we are fierce fighters, as anyone who have come against the swords can attest. The Mother Confessor has always fought for us with the same fierceness. We have always held with the Midlands and with the Mother Confessor, and so we accord your words great weight. With the greatest respect, we heed your counsel to join with Dahara. Our swords are lowered to you and Lord Rawl. The people of Penderson Reach, both those of simple muscle and bone, and those with magic's talents, wish to be at the van of battle against the horde from beyond the wilds, so that the enemy may have a bitter taste of our ferocity. We will be known to all from this day forward as the Daharans from Penderson Reach, if it so pleases you. Touched by his words, Colin bowed her head to him. The people of Penderson Reach did have a flair for the dramatic, but they were no less wholehearted for it. As small as their land was, they were not to be taken lightly. The ambassador's bold claim of their ferocity was no idle boast. If only their numbers were as great as their fortitude. I can't promise you the van, Ambassador Wexler, but we will be honored to have your people with us in our struggle. We will value them regardless of how they serve. She turned a dispassionate face to the ambassador from Mardovia. The Mardovian people were proud, too, and no less fierce. They had to be, for their survival in tough country among the wilds, though they also were a small land. Ambassador Selden, please come forward and deliver Mardovia's decision. Ambassador Selden glided forward, wearily eyeing the others. He bowed from the waist, his white hair falling forward over the gold braiding on the shoulders of his red coat as he did so. Mother Confessor, the Assembly of Seven of Mardovia in our mother city of Renwald has charged me with the duty of the long journey to Adundril to relay their decision. The Assembly of Seven has no desire or intention to relinquish rule over our beloved people to outlanders, whether they be from Dahara or from the Imperial Order. Your war with the Imperial Order is not our war. The Assembly of Seven has ruled that Mordovia will remain sovereign and will remain neutral. Behind her, in the silence, a soldier coughed. The sound of it echoed around the stone chamber.
Ambassador Selden, the land of Mordovia lies among the eastern wilds, not far from the old world. You will be vulnerable to attack. Mother Confessor, the walls surrounding our mother city of Renwald have stood the test of time. As you say, we lie among the people of the wilds. Those people in the past have tried to exterminate us. None ever succeeded in so much as breaching the walls, much less overcoming our stalwart defenders. Instead, the various peoples of the wilds now trade with us, and Renwald is a center of commerce in the eastern wilds of the Midlands, respected by all who once sought to conquer us.
Colin leaned forward. Ambassador, the Order is no tribe from the wilds. They will crush you. Doesn't the Assembly of Seven have the sense to realize that?
Ambassador Selden smiled indulgently. Mother Confessor, I understand your concern, but as I have said, Renwald's walls have stood us in good stead. Be assured, Renwald will not fall to the Order.
His expression hardened.
Nor will it fall to this new alliance you form with Dahara. Numbers do not mean much against a knob of stone in the wilds. Would-be conquerors soon tire of breaking their teeth on so small a morsel. Our small size, our location, and our walls make us less than worth the trouble. Should we join with you, then we would be vulnerable, because we would represent resistance. Our neutrality is not of hostile intent. We will be willing to trade with your alliance, as we will be willing to trade with the Imperial Order. We wish harm to no one, but we will defend ourselves.
Ambassador Selden, your wife and children are in Renwald. Don't you understand the danger to your family?
My beloved wife and children are safe behind the walls of Renwald, Mother Confessor. I fear not for them.
And will your walls stand against magic? The Order uses those with magic. Or are you too drunk with the past to see the threat to your future?
His face had reddened.
The decision of the Assembly of Seven is final. We don't fear for our safety. We have people of magic in turn to protect the walls from magic. Neutrality is not a threat. Perhaps you should pray to the good spirits for mercy, since it is you who sues for war. To live by violence is to invite it.
Colin drummed her fingernails against the desktop as everyone awaited her words. She knew that even if she could convince this man, it would do no good. The Assembly of Seven had made its decision, and he could not change it even if he wanted.
Ambassador Selden, you will leave Adendril by the end of the day. You will return to the Assembly of Seven in Renwald and tell them that Dahara does not recognize neutrality. This is a struggle for our world, whether it is to thrive in the light or wither under the shadow of tyranny. Lord Rawl has decreed that there are no bystanders. I have decreed no mercy against the Order. We are of one mind in this. You are either with us, or you stand against us. The Imperial Order views it the same. Tell the Assembly of Seven that Mordovia now stands against us. One of us, either Dahara or the Order, will conquer Mordovia. Direct them to pray to the good spirits and ask that it is we who conquer you and take Renwald instead of the Order. We will impose harsh sanctions for your resistance, but your people will live. Should the Order set upon you first, they will annihilate your defenders and enslave your people. Mordovia will be ground into the dust of the past.
His indulgent smile widened.
Fear not, Mother Confessor. Renwald will stand against any land, even the Order.
Colin regarded him with cold ire.
I have walked among the dead inside the walls of Ebenicia. I have seen the slaughter at the hands of the Order. I have seen what they did to the living first.
I will pray for those poor people who will suffer because of the mad delusions of the Assembly of Seven. Colin angrily gestured to the guards to escort the man from the chambers. She knew what would happen to the Mardovian people if the Order attacked first. She knew, too, that Richard could not risk the lives of allies simply to take Renwald in order to protect it. It was too distant a land. She would advise against it, as would any of his generals. Mardovia was lost. Their neutrality would draw the Order as the scent of blood drew wolves. She had walked through the gates in the massive walls of Renwald. The walls were impressive. They were not invincible. The Order had wizards, like Marlin. The walls would not stand against wizards' fire, despite those of magic's talent defending Renwald. Colin tried to put the fate of Mardovia from her mind as she called the pair from the royal house in Grenadin forward.
"How does Grenadin stand?" she growled.
Walter Cholbane cleared his throat. His sister spoke.
"Grenadin, a land of great importance, a land of vast fields which produce—"
Colin cut her off. "I asked how Grenadin stands." Leonora dry-washed her hands as she considered the resolve in Colin's eyes.
"The royal house offers its surrender, Mother Confessor."
"Thank you, Leonora. We are gladdened for you and for your people. Please see to it that my officers here are granted any information they need so that your army can be brought under coordination of our central command."
"Yes, Mother Confessor," she stammered. "Mother Confessor, are our forces to be bled against the walls of Renwald to bring them down?"
Grenadin was north of Mardovia and in the best position to attack, but Colin knew that Grenadin would not relish attacking a trading partner. Moreover, some of the family of the Assembly of Seven had married into the royal house of Cholbane.
"No.
Renwald is a city of the walking dead. The vultures will pick it clean. In the meantime, trade with Mardovia is forbidden. We trade only with those who join us."
"Yes, Mother Confessor."
"Mother Confessor," Walter, her brother, interjected, "we wish to discuss some of the terms with Lord Rawl. We have things of value to offer, and matters of interest to us that we wish to bring to his attention."
"Surrender is unconditional. There is nothing to discuss. Lord Rawl has instructed me to remind you that there will be no negotiations. Either you are with us or you are against us. Now, do you wish to withdraw your offer of surrender before you sign the documents, and instead cast your fate with Mardovia?"
He pressed his lips together as he took a deep breath.
"No, Mother Confessor."
"Thank you. When Lord Rawl has the time, soon, I hope, he would very much like to hear what you have to say as a valued member of the Daharan Empire. Just remember that you are now part of Dahara, and he is the master of Dahara, the master of that empire."
She had treated them with less respect than the two small lands who had offered their surrender. Not to do so would have resulted in emboldening them and inviting trouble. These two were among those who always requested red rooms. Walter and Leonora seemed to relax, now that Colin had their acquiescence. The Cholbanes could be tenacious and stubborn to the end, but once an agreement was reached and their word given, they never looked back, never second-guessed what might have been. It was a quality that made dealings with them bearable.
"We understand, Mother Confessor," Walter said.
"Yes,"
his sister added.
"And we look forward to the day that the Imperial Order no longer threatens all our people."
"Thank you, both of you. I know this must seem harsh to you, but know that we rejoice to count you and your people among us."
As they moved off to sign the papers and talk with the officers, Colin turned her attention to Tristan Bashkar of Jara.
"Minister Bashkar, how stands Jara?"
Tristan Bashkar was a member of the royal family of Jara. In Jara, the position of minister was one of high rank and trust. Of those gathered, he was the only one with the authority to change his land's commitment without returning home for consultation. If he thought there was reason enough, he could alter the royal family's instructions, and thus Jara's stand. Hardly out of his 30s, he wore his age well. He also used his looks to distract people from his quick mind. After people had been disarmed by his likable smile, bright brown eyes, and smooth-spoken flattery, he would extract concessions before they realized they had parted with them. He brushed a thick lock of dark hair back from his forehead, a compulsive habit, or possibly a way to draw interest to his eyes, where people were often distracted. He spread his hands apologetically. "Mother Confessor, I'm afraid it's not as easy as a simple yes or no. Although I wish to assure you that we are in harmony with the great empire of Dahara, and admire the wisdom of both Lord Rawl and, of course, yourself, we have always put the advice of the Mother Confessor above all others." Colin sighed.
"Tristan, I'm in no mood for your usual games. You and I have sparred in these chambers more times than I can remember. Don't test me today. I'll not have it."
Being a member of the royal family, he was well trained in all the arts of war, and had fought with distinction in the past. Broad-shouldered and tall, he cut a handsome figure. His easy smile always carried a playful twist that cloaked any threat, were there one, and there sometimes was. Colin never turned her back, so to speak, on Tristan Bashkar. He casually unbuttoned his dark blue coat and rested a hand on his hip. The ploy revealed an ornate knife sheathed at his belt. Colin had heard it whispered that, going into battle, Tristan Bashkar preferred to draw his knife rather than his sword. It was whispered, too, that he got sadistic pleasure from slicing the enemy. "Mother Confessor, I admit that in the past I've been reticent to reveal our exact position in order to best protect our people from the avarice of other lands, but it isn't like that this time. You see, the way we view the situation,
I'm not interested.
I want only to know if you stand with us or against us. If you stand against us, Tristan, I give you my word that by morning we will have troops riding for the royal palace in Sandalar, and they will return with either unconditional surrender or the heads off the royal family. General Baldwin is here in Adendril with a sizable Celtish force. I'll send him. Keltons never let down their queen, nor rest until she is satisfied. I am now the queen of Kelton. Do you wish a fight with General Baldwin?"
"Of course not, Mother Confessor. We wish no fight.
But if you will hear me out..." Colin slapped a hand to the desk, silencing him. "When the Imperial Order held Adendril, before Richard liberated it, Jara sat on the council, allied with the Order."
"As was Dahara at the time," he gently reminded her.
Colin glared at him. "I was brought before the council and convicted of the very crimes committed by the Order. Wizard Ranson from the Order called for a death sentence. The counselor from Jara sat at this desk and voted to have me beheaded."
"Mother Confessor..."
Colin turned a finger to her right. "He sat right there and called for me to be put to death." She looked back to Tristan's brown eyes. "If you look closely, I think you will still be able to pick out a stain down the front of the desk over there. When Richard liberated Adendril, he executed those traitorous counselors. The stain was left by the Jarian counselor. I heard that Richard cleaved the man nearly in two, he was so angered by the betrayal to me and to the people of the Midlands." Tristan stood politely, showing nothing of his emotions. "Mother Confessor, it was not by the choice of the royal family that that counselor spoke for Jara. He was a puppet of the Order."
"Then join with us."
"We want to, and we intended to. In fact, I was sent with authorization to make it so."
"Whatever it is you want, Tristan, you'll not get it. We make the same offer to all, and no special terms for any."
"Mother Confessor, would it be considered a special term to hear me out?"
Colin sighed.
"Make it short, and keep in mind, Tristan, that your smile has no effect on me."
He smiled anyway. "As a member of the royal family, I have the authority and authorization to surrender Jara and join with you. Given the choice, that is what we wish."
"Then do it."
"The Red Moon interrupts those plans." Colin sat up straighter.
"What does that have to do with it?"
"Mother Confessor, Jabas Kedar, our star guide, holds great sway with the royal family. He has read the stars in the matter of our surrender and has given his opinion that the stars hold this action with favor.
Before I left home, Javas Kidar told me that the stars would give sign if circumstances changed, and to heed any sign. The red moon has given me pause in our plans.
The moon is not the stars.
The moon is in the sky, Mother Confessor. Javas Kidar counsels on the meaning of moon symbols also.
Colin pinched the bridge of her nose between a thumb and finger as she sighed.
Tristan,
are you going to allow harm to visit your people on the basis of such superstition?
No, Mother Confessor, but I am bound by my honor to give heed to the beliefs of our people. Lord Rawl said that surrender would not mean that we had to give up our customs and beliefs.
Tristan, you have an annoying habit of leaving out things you wish to ignore. Richard said that a land wouldn't have to give up its customs as long as they brought harm to no one and broke no laws common to all. You are stepping over a dangerous line.
Mother Confessor, we in no way wish to circumvent his words or to step over any line. I wish only some time.
Time? Time for what?
Time, Mother Confessor, to assure myself that the red moon isn't a sign that we have reason to fear joining with Tahara. Now, I can either travel back to Jara and consult with Javas Kidar, or I can simply wait here for a while, if you would prefer, to assure myself that the red moon is not a sign of danger.
Colin knew that the Jarians, and the royal family in particular, were fervent believers in guidance from the stars. As much effort as Tristan devoted to chasing skirts, Colin knew that were a beautiful woman to offer him her charms, he would flee from her if he believed the stars were against it. It would take him at least a month to return to Jara, consult the star guide, and return to Adendril.
How long would you have to wait in Adendril before you felt comfortable and could in good conscience surrender?
He frowned thoughtfully for a moment.
If Adendril remains safe for a couple of weeks after such a significant sign, then I would feel safe in knowing that the sign was not a bad portent.
Colin drummed her fingers. You have 2 weeks, Tristan, not one day more.
Thank you, Mother Confessor. I pray that in 2 weeks we can consummate our union with Tahara. He bowed. Good day, Mother Confessor, and I look forward to the stars remaining fair for us.
He took a step away, but turned back.
By the way, would you happen to know of a place I can stay for such a length of time? Our palace was burned down in your battle with the Blood of the Fold. What with all the damage to Adendril, I'm having difficulty in finding accommodations.
She knew what he was angling for, to be close so he could see if the stars struck out against the Haran rule. The man thought too much of himself, thought himself more clever than he was. Colin smiled. Oh, yes, I know a place. You will stay right here, where we can keep an eye on you until the 2 weeks are up.
He buttoned his blue coat. Why, thank you, Mother Confessor, for your hospitality. It is most appreciated.
And, Tristan, while you are a guest under my roof, if you lay a finger or anything else on any of the women living and working here, I will see to it that the anything else is cut off.
He laughed good-naturedly. Mother Confessor, I never knew you believed the gossip about me. I'm afraid that I often have to resort to the charms of coin for company, but I'm flattered that you would think me so talented at wooing young ladies. If I should break your rules, I would expect to be put on trial and subjected to your choice of punishment.
Trial. Richard said that the people who sent the Temple of the Winds away were put on trial. In the Wizard's Keep, there were records of all trials held there. She had never read any of those books, but she had been told of them. Maybe they could find out from the records of the trial what happened to the Temple of the Winds. As Colin watched Tristan Bashkar departing behind a pair of guards, she thought about Richard and wondered what he would find. She wondered if he was about to lose another brother. Colin knew most of the women working at the Confessor's Palace. The women at the palace respected Richard as a man of honor. She wouldn't like to think that they would be prey to a man who would win them by trading on their trust of Richard. She felt a pang of sadness for Richard. She knew he was hoping that Drefin would be a brother he could be proud of.
Colin hoped that Drefn didn't turn out to be trouble. She remembered his hand on Kara. Colin turned to the moored Sith.
Three more with us, one lost and one yet to decide.
Kara smiled conspiratorially.
A sister of the Aegil must be able to strike fear into people's hearts. Mother Confessor, you wear the Aegil well. I thought I could hear some of their knees knocking all the way up here.
Chapter 27. Armor and weapons clattered and clanged as the soldiers following behind marched up the steep, cobbled street. Narrow houses, mostly 3 and 4 stories, sat cheek by jowl with the upper floors overhanging the lower, so that the topmost almost closed off the sky. It was a gloomy part of the city. Soldiers throughout the city had cheered their thanks as Richard passed, wishing him good health and long life. Some had wanted to buy him a drink. Some had run up to bow before him and give the devotion. Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours. They had hailed him as a great wizard for protecting them and healing their sickness. Richard felt more than a little uncomfortable at their acclaim. He had, after all, simply instructed them to take well-known cures for intestinal distress. He hadn't worked any magic. He had tried to explain it wasn't magic, that the things they ate and drank had cured them. They would hear none of it. They had expected magic from him, and in their eyes they had gotten it. He had finally given up on explaining and took to waving his thanks for their praises. Had they gone to an herb seller, they would no doubt be just as healthy and complaining about the price. He had to admit, though, that it did make him feel good to know that he had helped people for a change instead of hurting them. He understood a little of what Nadine must feel when she helped people with her herbs.
This is the end of Side 1, Part B. There is no need to change the balance control. Simply turn this cassette to Side 2 and continue with Part B.